Good evening, everyone. First of all, I'd like to thank Rav Schechter for taking away from Rebbe's busy time to come here with us and share a few words with us. Second of all, unfortunately, Rav Ben Chaim was not able to make it this evening. He was just caught up with a few things in the Beit Din, and he sincerely apologizes. One, that he's not going to be here, and two, that you're going to have to be here more of me tonight. So apologies for that. During my time in graduate school for mental health counseling, I had the opportunity to learn about different substance use disorders and addictions. I learned about how an addiction, if someone has it, can take over someone's life by not allowing him to function in the way that normal people function. An addiction will persuade a person to seek the substance that he's addicted to at any cost. Some will dig deep into their savings account just to be able to afford that drug in order to satisfy their craving. At times, an addict will sacrifice necessities, daily necessities, such as food and clothing, just to obtain the drug. Another characteristic of an addict is that he will take every moment of his free time and use it just to feed his craving. Tonight, it's an interesting transition from that introduction, but tonight we commemorate the life and legacy of Maran Hamav Avadia Yosef, Zechuto Yagen Aleinu, Amen. Hamav Avadia lived most of his life, Rabotai, with a Torah addiction. There are many characteristics that addicts have. I just want to go and express two of them and tell you about those and about how Hamav Avadia lived with those as well. One, spending a majority of your time engaging in a behavior, thinking about that behavior, or arranging in engaging in that behavior. Maran, Zechuto Yagen Aleinu, did not even understand how a person can waste more than 3 hours a night sleeping. Rabotai. He spent most of his day and night engaged, toiling, in Torah learning. Not even caring about how tired he was. It's a story that one time Maran was walking back home late at night from Yeshivat Prat Yosef after Arvit. He stayed to learn a little bit and he lost track of time, Kedarko, and he ended up walking home very late. When he got home, he noticed that the door was locked. Not wanting to wake anyone up in the home, he just took out the Gemara that he was holding, sat down by the doorsteps, and to the light of the moon started learning. And he was learning and learning. In the morning, his father opened the door to walk out, to Bet Knesset in the morning, to Minyan, and lo and behold, it's little Avadia sitting by the doorstep, learning to the light of the moon. He asked him, what are you doing? What's going on? And Avadia responded exactly what happened. He said, listen, I didn't want to wake anyone up, so I stayed out here and spent the night, on the doorstep, learning. Sleep didn't mean anything to him. Another story, Maran and the Rabbanit were once being hosted by a very nice, generous family when visiting a certain community for Shabbat. And after the Friday night meal, him and the Rabbanit went into their guest room, only to see that, obviously, all the lights in the home were off, and the light in their room was off. However, he saw that there's one light in the closet. So what he did was, he took a chair, he opened the door, he walked in, he closed the door so that the Rabbanit should not be bothered or annoyed by the light and she'll be able to sleep. And he spent the entire night learning over there. This Rabbatai is a person that did not care about anything else. Torah to him was life. It was oxygen. The Torah says in Parashat Chukat, Zot Chukat HaTorah, Zot HaTorah Adam Ki Amut Be'ohel. And the Gemara learns out, the Gemara Masechet Brachot says, Amar Rish Lakish Minayin She'en Divrei Torah Mitkaimin Ela B'mi She'mit Atzmo Aleha She'nemar Zot HaTorah Adam Ki Amut Be'ohel. How do we know that a person can only acquire, or the Torah can only be fulfilled in a person that sacrifices his life for Torah? How do we know? Zot HaTorah Adam Ki Amut Be'ohel. And the oil of Torah, person who sacrifices his life, sacrifices well-being, his enjoyment, his pleasure in this world, if that's all sacrificed just for Torah, that's a person that the Torah will be fulfilled in. The Sfatemet asks an amazing question. It says there's another pasuk that says, "Ushmartem et chukotai v'et mishpatai asher yaseh otam ha'adam." Right? Hashem says you should keep all of my chukim and mishpatim, v'chai bahem, ani Hashem, and live with them, live by them. The Torah is commanding us to love life, to live life, not to sacrifice our lives for anything, obviously other than the big three. So Sfat Emet asks, on one hand, a person must sacrifice his life for Torah. On the other hand, the Torah wants us to love life and to live life. What's going on? And he explains like this, guys, his words are so powerful, I want to read them to you. Sfat Emet says, "Aval be'emet kifi ma shemimit atzmo aleha," according to how much you sacrifice your life for Torah, "kach ha-Torah mechayeh oto." That's how much the Torah will allow you to live. That's how much life you will have. If you sacrifice for Torah, the Torah will in return give you life. Dichtiv, as it says, "Torat Hashem timima meshivat nafesh," gives you life. "V'chol ha-kochot she'adam memaet benafsho bishvil ha-Torah," and all the power and all the energy and that a person has that he gives up just for Torah, "Meshiva Torah elav," the Torah returns back to him. "V'nimtza machlif chiyut over b'chiyut karamat la'ad," and it comes out that a person is sacrificing temporary life for eternal life. "U'kafi ha'esek b'Torah zochin l'idabek b'chaim," according to how much you involve yourself in Torah, that's how much life you're going to have. Chaim Avadia Yosef was a person who was filled with life. He lived life to its fullest. Another aspect is someone who is continuing in his addictive behaviors despite physical and or mental harm. So people like me and you care very much about our physical bodies and our physical well-being. In fact, some of us at times are over-consumed and by improving our physique. Maran had other priorities that were much higher up on his list. One time, later in his life, he had to go through a serious procedure that presented potential complications due to his age. He was very old at the time. As he was about to undergo this procedure, he made the doctors stall, he made them wait. He said, "Hold up one second, I need to take care of something, and I need to leave the hospital to take care of it." And doctors looked at him like, "Hello, this is, you know, a life-threatening condition that you have right now. We cannot wait any longer." And they didn't want to hear it. "This crazy rabbi, what does he want from us? What could be more important than a potential life-saving procedure?" they said to him. However, Maran insisted, and finally he had his way. He went home only to finish writing a tshuva and be matir and aguna to get married. This is a person who is not normal like me and you. He had other things that he cared about, as opposed to, you know, things on the top of our list of priorities. Like, what am I eating for lunch today? Like, what am I having for dinner tonight? Like, how many hours of sleep am I going to have tonight? These terms weren't in his vocabulary. He lived in such poverty that everyone in this room cannot even relate to. There was one time early on in his life when he had one child that needed to be nursed. And obviously, even early on in his life, he was a gadol in his town. People would come to him with shelot. But now he lived in a tiny, tiny, tiny apartment. And there was no, you know, usually you would tell your wife, "Go to the other room and nurse the baby." There was no other room. That was the room. And what happens when the baby needs to be nursed and is crying, and two or three of the gedolim of the town come to you with very urgent questions and need answers as soon as possible? So they bought themselves, him and the rabbanit, a tablecloth that was so long that reached the floor. And before the rabbanim came in, the rabbanit would sneak under the table and nurse the baby while Chacham Avadia was sitting and speaking to them. But he wanted to live a life like this. He did not care about anything else other than Torah. He didn't care. So Rabotai, I ask you a question. Is this nature or nurture? Is this something that, you know, did he like, in a way, flip out? You know, did he have like a midlife flip out? He went to Israel for the year and then came back and decided to be all, serious like this? Or was he always like this? How did this happen? And I think, l'aniyut da'ati, the answer to this question is, yes, obviously he was gifted with tremendous talents. However, the following story, which happened early on in his life, I think is one of the key factors, in his life, in his talents, as well as all of ours. In Yerushalayim, in the early 1900s, many of the Jews lived in tremendous poverty. Despite this, Maran's father insisted that his son go and learn yeshiva, even though he was struggling at work. But he insisted, listen, my little Avadia, I want him to go and live a life of Torah, and he sent him to Yeshivat Porat Yosef. And that happened until, it came a time where his father unfortunately needed some help and requested that his son, little Avadia, please, please come and help me out at the shop. And obviously, Chaim Avadia, my father needs some help at the shop. What am I going to do? We need to support the family. We need to put food on the table. So one morning, the Rosh Yeshiva, Reza Atiya, did not see Avadia there in the yeshiva. He didn't see him there. And he wondered what happened. He found him and he asked him, what's the deal? Avadia told him the whole story. He said, don't worry, you're not going anywhere. You're staying. Tomorrow morning you're coming back to yeshiva. What about my father? I'll take care of it. You trust me? Yes, I trust you. I'll take care of it. The very next morning, before his father even got to the shop to open up, Rav Ezra Atiya was there standing by the shop. And then his father came and said, Kavodo, what are you doing here? Can I help you with anything? He said, No, I'm here to work. I said, what do you mean you're here to work? Yeah, I understand that you need some help at the shop, and I'll be here to help you if you need the help. But don't take Avadia out of yeshiva. And he said, Chas v'shalom, Kavodo, he had tremendous respect for Rabbanim. He said, I can't be mevazeh, such a great Rav, I can't have you. He said, you don't want to have me, don't have me. I'm offering my services. But I don't allow you to take your son out of yeshiva. And that dedication to Torah, sacrificing his own well-being, to go and to work like a dog, just so that Avadia can sit and learn in yeshiva, that's a roshem, that made a roshem on Avadia. Things like that, his rabbanim that he had to look up to, his mentors, that he speaks a lot about in his various sfarim, and he always did. That's something that he grew up with. Something that we all, it's something to say stories about Rabbanim, but every story must have something that we take from it. And to take out of what we're discussing tonight is to understand that we all have to have role models. We all have to have mentors. It doesn't just come like that. We need to work through it. We need to work at it. The Torah says, there's another thing about him, I don't want to speak too long. The pasuk says in the sixth parashat Noach, Ele tolot Noach, Noach ish tzadik tamim haya bedor tav. So Noach was a tzadik in his generation. Rashi quotes two opinions as to what it means that he was a tzadik in his generation. He says, Yesh merabotenu shedorshin oto leshvach. There are from our chachamim that learn up, this pasuk that view Noach, to be appraised that he was a tzadik in his generation. Wow, what a low generation! But if you'll be in a greater generation, all the more so, you'd be even greater. And then Rashi continues, V'yesha dorshino toleganai, and others view Noach in a more negative and critical way. That, yeah, of course, Shkoyach, he was a tzaddik in such a low generation. Big deal to be in the lowest class and get an A. Of course, when everyone else is getting C's, a big deal if you get an A. Right? The class is so easy. But let's say he would be in a Moshe Rabbeinu's generation, he'd be just another stama guy. V'yesha dorshino toleganai. So there's a difference in the Lashon over there, if you notice. Yesh mirabotenu, and yesh shedorshin. Who's who? Who is the rabotenu and who's that? So I saw one explanation. Yesh mirabotenu, yes, the Chachamim looked at Noach in a very positive way. Ve'yesh shedorshin otole, who is that? Himself. He looked at himself in a critical way. He said, no, I'm not good enough. I need to be stronger. I need to be better. He was a tremendous anav. Havadia Yosef, by the way, with all of his knowledge, was a tremendous anav. There's a story that comes to mind of one time, and I say this story a lot, it's a very powerful story, that one time, he used to be flown in all over Israel, really all over the world, to give divrei chizuk and musar and halakha, for sure. But one time he was flown in by helicopter into a soccer stadium that was filled with around 10,000 people waiting to hear his holy words. And as the helicopter landed at midfield, he came out and they hooked up the microphone to him. And he didn't realize that the microphone was on. And he started speaking to himself. As thousands of people are listening to his words, he was quoted as saying, "Anochi afar va'efer, anochi afar va'efer, I'm a nobody, I'm a nothing." Yet even though he was the person chosen and selected and elected to be there in front of tens of thousands of people, and it's a tremendous, tremendous, you know, temptation to think highly of yourself. Wow, I am all that. Despite that, he saw that as an opportunity to remind himself that he is not all that. Now, between me and you, he is all that. But that's something for us to learn. Something for us to understand. That we have success in our learning. Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. Continue. But it's not enough. We must continue and push and push and push. If Chaim Avadia said it was enough, he wouldn't reach, you know, the great level that he reached. Just one last note of what he means to me. And I'm sure he means this to a lot of people. But when I heard the news excuse me, of his passing, I had the zechut, when I didn't live here, I lived in the Five Towns, I had the zechut every Monday morning to drive Rav Moshe Weinberger when he would be teaching here, Mondays and Tuesdays. I had the zechut of driving him here. You know, I had the zechut of being his chauffeur. only one way, right? Only there. On the way back, I wasn't able to. But he received the phone call in the car. It was like, I don't know, 9 in the morning. And and you know, it was literally a 10-second phone call. And he shut off the phone. And he said, "The Gadol Ador was just Nifter." That's what he said. And I said, who was just Nifter? He said, Rabbi Avadia Yosef was just Nifter. And it didn't hit me. You know, I was there 9 o'clock in the morning. You know, I was there the entire day, morning, afternoon, Seder. And on my way back, when I was driving home, bam. You know, I had a few minutes to just sit alone and think. And it hit me. I felt like, you know, chas v'shalom, but a parent had just left me. Someone who's been there holding my hand throughout my years of growth and learning had just left me. Was not there for me anymore. Now, I'll be straight up with you. I never met him. I never spoke a word to him, unfortunately. I saw him a few times, but I never had the zechut of having a conversation with him or getting a bracha from him. And despite that, that's how I felt. Because he is a person that his love for all of Am Yisrael was tangible. You were able to feel it. It was in the air. You could even put your finger on it. Hundreds of thousands of Jews, Sephardim, Ashkenazim, felt like this as well. They felt like their father had just left them. However, he left us a tremendous Yerusha. And that is on every single bookshelf in every single yeshiva in the world. Almost every single yeshiva. That's his Yerusha. And you open up the Sfarim, in most yeshivot, especially the Sephardi yeshivot, there's not a day that passes without his name being quoted multiple times. You open up a Sfarim, it's as if he's talking to you directly. That's what he left us. And in his memory, may we all be zoche to grow in Torah, to reach tremendous heights, to always remember his words, Anochi Efar Ve'efer, and use that not as a motivation to nail us down in a coffin, but to use that as a motivation to push forward and to continue forward, and that it's never enough. One more minute of learning, 2 more minutes of one more daf of Gemara, 1 more Mishnah, 1 more Pasuk, 1 more Shiur to go to, 1 more Night Seder. Use that as a motivation, and that his words should light up our lives, and may we be zocheh that to see Pnei HaMashiach and unite ourselves with him. B'mira v'amenu, amen. Without further ado, I'd like to chavod, call upon Rav Herschel Schechter. Chavod.
I can believe all the stories that you told about Chacham Avadia. I knew him a little bit, not that much. I feel very privileged that the last time I saw Chacham Avadia, he gave me a big slap. Every few years, they would take the group of boys from the NCSY Kolo, the learning group in the summertime, to visit Chacham Avadia. They wouldn't tell him in advance that they're coming. So they came one night. I remember one year we went. It was a few months before he passed away, in the summertime. So he, so they went to Dav Meirev in his Beis Medrash. After Meirev, one of the Madrichim from the NCSY group, asked Chacham Avadya, could he say 10 minutes of Divrei Torah for the boys? So he sized up the group. And he spoke in an easy Hebrew, so they're all Americans, so they should understand. And he said exactly what they had to hear. It wasn't too high, wasn't too low, exactly the level that they needed, chizuk for learning Torah, how important it was. And then everyone was walking out of the Beis Medrash after 10 minutes, and then he asked this madrich, who's in charge over here? Who's the rabbi in charge? So he said, I'm in charge. So he shakes my hand, shalom aleichem, and then for people that he liked very much, he used to slap them on the cheeks, say, give me your slap. I know that because I once attended a bris a few years earlier. There's a Rabbi Yeshaya Steinberger, who's a rebbe in Yeshiva Takotel, I think. So his son is married to Chacham Avadya's granddaughter. So when they had a baby boy, Rabbi Steinberger invited me to come to the bris. So Chacham Avadya was the sandik, and he gave the baby the name. And I saw the way he was treating his grandchildren, his yedidim. He was slapping them all. So I feel very honored that he slapped me also on both cheeks. Meloshen chiba. In the summertime, I go to Tannersville on vacation. So there's a girl who lived in Tannersville. She was brought up in Tannersville. I think she lives in Hawaii now. And she published a book about inside stories about different people. So she printed a whole story about Chacham Avadya and me that just never happened. and after Chacham Avadya passed away, so they were telling over this story on the radio in Eretz Yisrael. But the story never happened. So they said Chacham Avadya, he spoke in yeshiva a few times when he was chief rabbi, so he used to come and give a shiur all the time. So on one occasion, this girl writes a story. He was giving a shiur in Lampert Auditorium, and one of the rabbanim from the audience stands up and asks him a kasha in the middle of the shiur. Nobody asks. In America, we don't ask kashas in the middle of the shiur. In Eretz Yisrael, that's the common practice. They hack you up. I remember when Rav Shach was giving a shiur in part of his yeshiva, he had a plea to them, please let me say the shiur. They kept on asking him kashas. They didn't let him say anything. So, but in America, we don't. So the whole story is mezuyif mitoicha from the very outset. So the way the girl printed the story, one of the people from the audience asked him a kasha, and Chacham Avadya answered it. Then the person from the audience asks him again, another question, and he answers it again. Then he asks him a third question. So I don't remember, Chacham Avadya wore glasses. I don't remember. So I think in this book it says he lowered his glasses on his nose, and he looked at the person, and he said, "Haim kvodo, hu harab shech." So he said in Hebrew, "I know what you wrote in your sefer Simon Chaf Dalet, and I don't agree." So the moral of the story they're trying to bring out was that not only was he a baki in all the famous swarm, he knew all the swarm that people were printing in our generation also. You know, Rabbi Binyamin Tabori just passed away recently, so his father used to encourage him. His father is Rav Tzvi Tabori. So his father used to encourage him, write a sefer, Chacham Avadya will quote you. He quotes everybody, writes everything. So that story, this story about that I was mopsik in this year, this story never happened. And I remember someone told me, I saw it in the book, someone showed me the book from this girl from Tannersville. And soon after he passed away, they told over the story on the radio to say what a bucky he was. So someone told it to me, and I thought maybe I forgot. So I asked all the other rabbis. I asked Rabbi Reichman, I asked the other rabbis. They all said the story never happened. Where no one was ever mafsik him in the middle of a shiur in Lampert Auditorium. I have the latest sefer that they put out, just came out this week, that I don't have, the Yechaveh Das Chelek Zayin. I don't have it yet. I think it just came out in Eretz Yisrael. The latest sefer that I have is Chelek Yud Aleph of Yabia Omer. So just the last few days, I was looking through several of the tshuvas just to enjoy. He has such a beautiful style of writing. Everybody loves his style. I think he got a pras just for the style. Forget about the content. The style is so beautiful. So in Shulchan Aruch, I'll just mention some of the things that I came across in the last few days. In Shulchan Aruch, they quote the Gemara in Brachas that if the Shliach Tzibur made a mistake in Shachris Amr Shchodesh, this morning was Rosh Chodesh, and the Shliach Tzibur forgot Yalav Yavai, and everybody's banging on the shtender, Yalav Yavai, Yalav Yavai. Chazan took out his hearing aid, and he didn't hear that they keep on telling Yalav Yavai, and he finishes the whole Shmon Esrei. So what do you do? So it says in the Shulchan Aruch, he doesn't have to repeat the Shmon Esrei. He can rely on the fact that he's going to say Musaf, here someone else is going to be a Shliach Tzibur for Musaf, and I'll mention the fact that it's Rosh Chodesh in the middle of Musaf. So if it's good for the Chazan L'chatchila, maybe it's good b'di'evid for a Yochid. So what if a Yochid daven Shachris, and if he got Yalav Yavah, so he's supposed to repeat the Shmon Esrei and remember the second time to say Yalav Yavah. So what if he didn't? He daven Musaf already, and he mentions Rosh Chodesh in Musaf. So is the halacha that b'di'evid the Yochid is Yotze? So by the Shliach Tzibur, since it's a Tircha de Tzibura, so we say Shashatcha k'di'evid dami, the Shliach Tzibur is allowed to do l'chatchila. What would be acceptable for the Yochid? Or do you say, no, the Kula is only by the Shliach Tzibur, and the Yochid, even if he already daven Musaf, he has to repeat Shachris because he forgot Yalvia. So the Magen Avraham, in his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, quotes that this is the machlokes, the Shilti Giborim, and Broches, and other Rishon. So how do we paskin? So we paskin, Meikar Edin, Sofit Broches Lahokel, that if you're ready daven Musaf, then you don't have to repeat the Shachris. We assume that the Pshat, why the Shliach Tzibur doesn't have to say over the Shachris, because Shasatrak, it's a Tircha de Tzibur, Shasatrak, the Shliach Tzibur can do l'chatchila, but usually is unacceptable b'di'evin. And then Rav Soloveitchik said over in the name of his grandfather, Rav Chaim, that, so why do you even tell a person that he should repeat Shachris? He's going to daven Musaf, another Efa, another 15 minutes, going to daven Musaf. So it's going to turn out that the second Shachris wasn't necessary. So shouldn't it be a bracha levatola? So he said, his grandfather Rav Chaim said, the second Shachris is really a tefilas nedava. After he's going to daven Musaf, it'll come out, he mentioned Rosh Chodesh in the Shmona Esrei. So the second Shachris will be a tefilas nedava. So based on that, the understanding, so Rav Chaim thought that since the Shulchan Aruch recommends that Bizman Hazeh, we don't try to say Tfilas Nedava. In the days of the Gemara, there used to be an institution of Tfilas Nedava. But we're not so mechaveh when we daven the regular Shmon Esrei, so we should go volunteer Tfilas Nedava. In addition, so Rav Chaim recommended that Bizman Hazeh, nobody should repeat Shachris. If you forgot Shachris, no one should repeat Shachris, because we don't recommend Tfilas Nedava. Everyone should rely l'chatchila on Musaf. So I saw Chacham Avadya doesn't say so for the brachas. Usually, that's one of the most often quoted Rosh Yitevis that he has, Samach Beis Lamed. So for the brachas lohakel. I never saw that Rosh Yitevis anywhere else. Chacham Avadya, every other tshuva is Samach Beis Lamed. So for the brachas lohakel. He doesn't go like that. Why? Because the Chidah quotes a tshuva Sarashbo that we don't have. Tshuva Sarashbo from Ksav Yad. And the Chidah quotes the Tshuva Sarashbo, who says that even if you daven Shachris, if you got the Alva Yavai, Yom HaShchodesh, then you daven Musaf already. So the Rashbo writes, the only Rishon that talks about the issue, Magen Avraham quoted him, Achlok in Sachreinim. So the only Rishon that we have who talks about the issue is the Rashbo. So the Chidah quotes the Rashbo's Tshuva that you have to daven over Shachris even after you've already davened Musaf. So Chacham Avadya quotes this Chidah b'shem the Rashbo. And then he writes, Machon Yerushalayim has just printed this Tshuva Sarashbo together with a whole bunch of other additional Tshuva Sarashbo that we never had from Ksav Yad. So therefore, he says, Halacha L'maisa, like the Rashbo. Totally not the way the Psak HaMekubal always was, like the Mishnah Berurah said. That is the Machlokes Achreinim says, Sovik Brachos L'Hokel. But Chacham Avadya has that attitude. When you have a Machlokes Achreinim, and there's only one Rishon who talks about the topic, so you follow that Rishon. And Hilchas Sukkah also, he has such a tshuva, such an attitude. There's a machloikas sachreinim. You're not supposed to be mamid the schach with something that's posel a sachich ban. A chumra. So what if you have shivre kelim? Shivre kelim is only posel a sachich ban mid the rabbana. So do you say you shouldn't be mamid the schach with shivre kelim? Or maybe I should say that's a gzeirah l'gzeirah. So that's a machlokes achreinim, and there's a stir in the Mishnah Berurah between one siman and the other, around three pages apart, whether it's mutar l'chatchila to be mamid ischach with ischach posel, that's only posel midrabbanan. So Chacham Avadya writes in one of the earlier volumes, not in this one, he writes, since an achreinim it's a machlokes, in Rishonim we only have one Rishon who talks about the topic, the Ritva and Sukkah, He says Lahakel, so he says we follow the one Rishon who says like that. That's it's not only Chacham Avadia. That's a general attitude. Many other poskim have that as well. I enjoyed very much Chacham Avadia has the tshuva that he wrote a few months after Melchemet HaShechrur in 1948. September 1948, he was in Cairo then, apparently. And he writes, because of the war, they didn't send any Esrogim built in Merkavim to Egypt. The only Esrogim that were available were Esrogim that apparently were Merkavim. So what is he going to do? So he has a very beautiful tshuva. He writes, he used to live in Eretz Yisrael before he went to Cairo. So he writes that the minig always was that they said the bracha on Esrogim Merkavim, tzaddikim, talmid hachamim. They used to use Esrogim Merkavim because it doesn't, the harkova doesn't really change the DNA of the Esrog. It stays the same. It just helps it grow a little better. So he says, even though we're usually makma not to use Esrogim Merkavim, he says, if you have a shas atrak like this, so he says, you can even say a bracha halacha lamaisa. But if you have, if there's one place in town where there is an Esrog built in Merkav, you shouldn't withhold the secret from the balabatim. Don't give him the Esrog Merkav and tell him there's no problem. Tell them if they walk a half an hour, they'll be able to get an Esrog built in Merkav in the other half of the city. So walk over there. But to tell the people not to say a bracha at all, he said, that's not right. Because the minig always was, as he recalled it, the minig always was in Yerushalayim, by tzaddikim, talmid hachamim, that they would say a bracha on Esrog HaMurkav. Some of you may have heard, there's a question, what bracha one recites over schnapps? Tosfos is bothered with akasha in brachas. Why don't we say bari minim zaynus on beer? Because if you have vegetable soup, even if you strained out all the vegetables, but you cook the vegetables in the water, so the brachas are adoma, the Gemara says. So since the whole flavor of the beer is from the grain, they soak the grain, and a lot of times they cook the grain, so why shouldn't we say bari minim zaynus on the beer? So Tosfos has three different answers, and all the poskim hold the halacha like the last answer, that since beer is a beverage, beverages are always shahako, period. On vegetable soup, Tosfos assumes vegetable soup is a meichel. Even though you strained out all of the vegetables and it's completely liquid, it pours like water, but that's a meichel. The difference between a meichel and a mashke is not so much that this is a liquid and this is a solid, alpi pashtos, but rather that this is a beverage and the other one is a food. So that's what the Mishnah Berurah quotes such a psak from the Chayyadam, in order to say, bar nefesh, is how much food do you have to eat? So if you're eating food, you have to eat a kazais. And if you're drinking a beverage, you have to drink a revius. So how much soup do you have to drink in order to say, bar nefesh? So the Mishnah Berurah quotes the Chayyadam, kazais, not revius. Reviz is a beitza machza, because kezayis is much less than a kebeitza. So why is the shear for soup kezayis? Why shouldn't it be reviz? The answer is because soup is not a beverage that you drink when you're thirsty. Soup is a liquid meichel. That's where we usually assume the pshat. So I thought that schnapps should be mezainis, because people don't drink schnapps when they're thirsty. Even I used to learn mecharusa with a Russian. So the Russians like to drink a lot of vodka, but they don't drink vodka when they're thirsty. When they want to relax, they drink a lot of vodka. And they don't get drunk. I don't know how they do that. So there's a Pirush HaMishnayos. There was a great goyim who was killed by the Nazis in the Warsaw Ghetto. He was known as the Kozhuk Lava goyim. I think they have his photograph in the library near the elevator on 5A. Right next to the elevator. Apparently his brother donated money to the library, so they dedicated the 5A floor in memory. I don't think he was a Torah Mada man. He was a Torah and Chassidus man. He gave a shiur in the Lublina Yeshiva. Meir Shapira, the rabbi of Lublin, invited him to come to give the high shiur. He said Chassidus and he said Yeshiva. So he has a Dvar Torah about saying bar nefashos on schnapps, how much schnapps you have to drink. So he quotes, there's a commentary on Mishnayos by the Kamarna Rebbe. On the bottom of the page, every couple of pages, he has a few comments. So he comments on the Mishnayos and Taurus that schnapps is a meichel, it's not a mashke. The difference is between Kabbalah Stuma, it's in Mishnayos Taurus. The difference is in Hilchas Kabbalah Stuma between a meichel and a mashke. So I thought that the schnapps should be bar minim zayis, because the accepted answer of Tosfos, all of the poskim accept the answer that the reason why you don't say bar minim zayis on the beer is because the beer is a beverage, and all beverages are she'akol, but schnapps al pidin should not be a beverage. The schnapps should be considered a machlas. It should really be bar minim zayis. So Asocha Chacham Avadya, in this volume, Yud Aleph, has a long essay where he quotes 20 times many marmakayimus as I was aware of. He quotes everything that I said, Atesis and Shabbos, and Egemar and Beitza, and everything. Then he quotes 20 times as much, Lekan u'lekan. He quotes all the different opinions on both sides, whether the difference between Oichel HaMashke is solid versus liquid, or the difference is beverage versus food. So I found that I found it very fascinating. And the other day, I just came across, this comes up, halacha l'maaseh, there's a din of havchana, that if a woman loses her husband, or the woman gets divorced, so she's not supposed to remarry for tzadik yom, for 92 days. 90 days, aside from the day that the husband gave her the get, and aside from the day that she remarries. So one of the dayonim, and a Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael, asked Chacham Avadya, the woman set her wedding date with the new husband the night of the 92nd day. So he wants to know, do we allow them, can we be Masada Kiddushin? Maybe you have to wait till the daytime of the 92nd day. So I thought Chacham Avadya worked a little too hard over there. I thought that was a Dovah Pasha, that it's Mutam. So I wouldn't have written the tshuva like that. He writes about Miktsas Hayom Kukula Balayla, that some Rishonim hold even by Avelus, the seventh day of Shiva. We all say Miktsas Hayom Kukula in the morning of the seventh day of Shiva, the morning of the 30th day of Shloshim, not the night before. So he quotes many Rishonim disagree. They even say Miktsam Kukula Balayla. But here you don't have to say Miktsam Kukula. Here you can't apply Miktsam Kukula. It doesn't fit into the rules and regulations. I don't see why he even had a... He should have just said, absolutely, perfectly okay. I don't know why he had to give such... It's a very short tshuva, but I thought the tshuva should have been 2 lines. And he wrote 30 lines. Well, it was interesting. I found it very interesting. We have in New York, it's a dovah yadua that there are certain Orthodox shuls where they have a non-Jewish elevator man who takes the people up. Those who can't walk the staircase, it's too difficult. He takes them up in the elevator. So what Ayat Samir with the Nochi, you're not allowed to. So everybody assumes that even if I push the button myself, it's only a Nisa Derabbanan, it's not a Melocha Deraisa. So if he asks the non-Jew to take you up in the elevator, it's a Shvuz de Shvuz. You want to go to Shul to Daven. Or instead, you live on the 20th floor. So it's going to be a lack of Einik Shabbos to climb up 20 floors or something like that. So we usually assume that's a Shvuz de Shvuz B'Makam Mitzvah. So Chacham Avadya has a tshuva in this Chelik Yud Aleph. He just says it's awesome. You're not allowed to have the Goyish elevator man to take you, unless there are another 2 people who are not Jewish going with you. So the elevator man, you go bus a roiv. So the elevator man is taking all 3 of us. The roiv of us are non-Jews. So if the roiv are nochrim, so it's a malach shenaseh bishvil nochrim, it's not bishvil Yisrael. But if it's one Jew and one non-Jew, or all the people are Jewish, he just ends off the Chuy and Alata. He totally ignores the consideration that it's a Shvuz, the Shvuz Makam Mitzvah. I was very surprised. There are no footnotes there either. I was very surprised about that. I saw he has a tshuva. When you have a non-Jewish man wants to convert to become Jewish, so he has to have first Mila, you have to have a Bris Mila, and then you have to Vila in the Mikvah. So the common practice is, the way it's described in the Gemara, when the man and the woman, when they're in the mikvah up to their neck in water, so you do a Kabbalah Sal Mitzvahs all over again. We've been working with the candidate for conversion for the last couple months, or for the last couple years, whatever the case happens to be. And we know that the person is interested in converting. But we want to have a dramatic Kabbalah Sal Mitzvahs. So we have a dramatic Kabbalah Sal Mitzvahs as the Ger Mamish moments before he's going to dip his head under the water. So we ask him, do you reject the Trinity? Do you believe in one God? Do you believe in Torah Men HaShemayim? Do you believe in Torah Shebaal Peh? Do you commit yourself to observe all the mitzvahs, the Raisa, the Rabbanan, all the Minhagim? Do you commit yourself to marry a Jewish girl, to observe Talmud Torah Shebaal? You don't go through all the 613 mitzvahs, he'll get pneumonia. He's undressed, he's standing in the mikveh. But you go some highlights, you review 5 minutes worth of Kabbalah Sal Mitzvahs. So the din is that this dramatic Kabbalah Sal Mitzvahs, the Rambam says the dramatic Kabbalah Sal Mitzvahs is not Miyakev. The fundamental Kabbalah Sal Mitzvahs is Miyakev. But the dramatic Kabbalism, it's immediately before Znam Yakim. So Chacham Avadya has some Rabbonim insisted you have to have the Kabbalah. The Gemara said you have Kabbalah on mitzvahs right as the ger is in the mikveh up to his neck in water. So some of the Dayanim in Eretz Yisrael insisted that you have to do the dramatic Kabbalah on mitzvahs before you do the milah. And if you didn't have the Kabbalah on mitzvahs before the milah, even though it's obvious that the milah was done l'shem gerus, the bracha was said, and we know that we've been working with the candidate for conversion for the longest time. And he tells us he's ready to accept everything. So some poskim insist that you have to have the Kabbalah on mitzvahs before the milah. And if you didn't, you have to do over the milah. How can you do over the milah? There's no orla, there's nothing left to cut. So the din is that what if a non-Jew had a circumcision, not l'shem gerus, so you do hatovas dambris. So some of the poskim said you have to do hatovas dambris over here. So I thought that was utterly ridiculous. The Nebuchadnezzar says in the Gemara, like the Gemara says that this dramatic Kabbalah on mitzvahs is done as the ger is in the mikveh. Nebuchadnezzar says you have to do it before the bris milah. So Chacham Avadya also holds like that. He says it's good b'di'evin. He says it. I don't know why he doesn't say it's good l'chatchila. He says it's good b'di'evin. And then he says, but if the ger wants to satisfy even the opinion of those rabbanim who hold that it's no good, he said we would permit him to undergo the hatafas dan bris. It's also not allowed to cause bleeding unnecessarily. So he said, he wouldn't consider this chavola, shalola tzorach, since he's doing it in order to satisfy an opinion. He wants to make sure that his geris is 100% acceptable. But I was surprised that he even entertained such a svara. He disagreed with the other chachamim. He thought that it's not necessary. But he even says that if the ger wants to, he would permit him to do it. That's all bris. I found that very surprising. I saw there was a very short shuva there. Apparently, Chacham Avadya had discussed an issue with someone, Baal Peh, at some function. And then he wanted to get it, the other rabbi wanted to get it picked up, so he sent them a letter that runs as follows. The Gemara has in very rare instances a concept of Afkina Rabbana Lekidushim Minei. In rare cases, the Gemara say, call the Mekadosh Adaita, the Rabbana Mekadosh, and if the Chachamim feel it necessary, they can declare that the Kiddushin that you did with a woman is not valid. So one of the cases that the Gemara has in Maseches Gittin, in the beginning of Perek HaShaleach, so one of the cases the Gemara has like this. A man writes a get to give to his wife, and he gives it to a shliach. The shliach is traveling to the other city where the wife lives. And then the husband makes a declaration after the shliach leaves already. Instead of calling up on the phone, on his cell phone, and telling him, don't give the get, I changed my mind, I don't want you to give the get. He makes a declaration in his city. The days of the Gemara, they didn't have any cell phone, they didn't have any telephones at all. He makes a declaration, he's mevatel the get, he's mevatel the shliachas, he doesn't want the shliach to deliver the get. How is the shliach going to know not to deliver the get? So the shliach is going to give the get, the woman is going to think that she's divorced. So she's going to go remarry. It's going to be a disaster. So the Gemara says, you're not allowed to be mevatel get shalei b'fnei hashaleach, and if you did, we declare atkina rabbana lekedushim minei. We declare that the woman is allowed to remarry, and if she remarries, the children from the second husband are not mamzerim, because the marriage with the first husband was null and void. The rabbana will mafkir that kedushim. So Tosis is bothered with Akasha. What if a couple are married, and the woman has an affair with someone else, and she gives birth to a mamzer? So if the husband wants to save the child from, it's not his child, it's his wife's child. She became pregnant from someone else. So what if the husband wants to save the child from being a mamzer? So the Gemara has an expression, really, chol mamzerim l'toher. There's a way to undo mamzer. So Tosfos says, here's a way. If the wife gave birth, the wife had an affair with someone else, and she gave birth to a child, child is a mamzer, so let the husband write a get, give it to a shliach, tell the shliach, don't deliver the get to my wife. Then after the shliach leaves, be mevat l'shliach ha-shalei b'fanav, and then you say that afkina rabbani kedushin minei. So Tosfos has two opinions. What's the din? So one opinion of Tosfos is that that's a joke. You're abusing the system. They said afkina rabbani because it's going to be a big shas atrak. How's the woman going to know that the get is invalid? But here, the whole thing is all a whole setup just to undo the mamzeris. If you're doing it for that purpose, the Chan made a takana, and you're abusing the takana, so the takana doesn't apply. You don't say afkino in such a case. That's what we usually assume. Then Tosis has another opinion. No, that's takad din. Anachinami yichol amamzerim litoher. If you do it like that, then it's legitimate and it's legal and takad the child. You can undo the mamzeris. So it's Yodua the Maharsham has such a tshuva that he once recommended to do like that. So Chacham Avadya, I never knew this. We all knew that Rabbi Gorin once recommended like this, to do the shtick, to follow the Masham's suggestion, to follow that opinion. Test. I never knew that Chacham Avadya also recommended this in this volume that they printed. I don't know if Chacham Avadya would have authorized, would have given them permission. He passed away. After a person dies, sometimes it's not fair that you print tshuvas that he wrote. Moshe Feinstein printed a lot of tshuvas during his lifetime. After he passed away, they're printing many more tshuvas. Maybe he changed his mind. Maybe he didn't want those tshuvas publicized. I don't know if Chacham Avadya is happy about the fact that they printed this. Very short tshuva. He says, yes, that's what I told you. You should do like the Masham. You should give a get to the shliach, and after the shliach leaves, then you should be mevatel a get, and then we'll apply afkino abonon, and you'll undo the mamzeris. I think that we all had tainus against Rabbi Gorin, why he recommended that. It's very surprising. To me, I found it very surprising that Chacham Avadya also recommended like that. There's a very important tshuva in this volume. In the shul, you have a lot of members in the shul. One of the people is a ger, very nice fellow. So they want to give him some kibbutz, so they want to appoint him as the gabbai for the collecting the tzedakah. The gabbai to take care of all the tzedakah in the shul. So the problem is that the Gemara learns out from the pasuk, Soim tosim alecha melech. It says Soim tosim the kefa loshen. So we say, Kol mesim is b'mashma. Not only, then it says, Mikerav achecha, mimuvcha shebachecha. You can't allot, lo sucha lo sucha lecha yishnachri, shalo achicha hu. You may not appoint as a melech a ger. You can only appoint as a melech one who has a very good yichas. And the Chazal say, not only to the position of malchus, Soim tosim kol mesim is b'mashma, you're not permitted to appoint a ger, even to be the president of the water carriers union. If there's a water, in the days of the Gemara, it had a water carriers union, whatever, a labor union. So you're not allowed to appoint the ger. If you have a club of gerim, you can appoint the ger to be the president of the club of the gerim. But to appoint the ger to be the president of an organization when you have gerim and non-gerim is keneged adin. So that was the shayla they presented to Chacham Avadya. Can you appoint the ger to be the gabbai over the tzedakah in the shul? Since most of the people in the shul are not gerim, what happened to the din of surah? So he writes a very beautiful tshuva. All the tshuvas are beautiful. Even if you want to disagree, the tshuvas are very beautiful. He quotes so beautifully. So he quotes halacha lemaise. He quotes many rishonim. Tosfos in different mesichtos says that if you're mekabel the ger, then there's no problem of surah. But the Nechumash is talking about Samtos, they want to appoint the ger as melech. So he quotes the poskim, that's only melech. By melech, memachmer, even if you want to be mekabel the ger as the melech, that's not permissible. But with respect to the shar mesimus, Samtos and kol mesimus memachmer, with respect to other in Yoni Sorora, if the people are mekabel, that's okay. And over here, the balabatim and the shul want to give a kibbut to the ger. So that's number one. Ruba the Ruba of the Rishonim say, if the community is mekabel, then there's no problem. And then he quotes a Meiri that none of us ever heard of. He dug up a Meiri that the only time there's a problem of appointing a ger is if he's the president all by himself. But if he shares the position with others, with a few others, then it's not really a full swar. So he says, appoint three gaboim. So two will not be gerim and one will be a ger. So it's shite. So he's not the rive of the gaboim, not ger. So he says, under those circumstances, he thinks that there's room to be made. I always love Chacham Avadya's tshuvas. They're so beautiful. I can't wait to get the next volume of the Chavadas that they just put out in Eretz Yisrael. I think I heard all the stories that you said. I think all the stories are true. They're not exaggerated. He was a very, very unusual person. I remember there was one year that Dr. Lam went there at Israel. He tried to get, after Chacham Abad retired from being chief rabbi, so Dr. Lam tried to get him to come to yeshiva for a year. So he said, he can't come for a year? He's busy, they started Shastan, he's busy with the politics, and I said, can't come for a year. They negotiated, so he said, he'll come for a week. So then, when the plane took off from Eretz Yisrael, they had headlines in the newspaper, Chacham Abadia sold his soul for money. That why you was paying him a fortune of money, and he's going to teach in YU for a week. They said the story was he agreed to come for nothing. The yeshiva didn't pay him any money. The Sephardic community in Flatbush, some Sephardic community in Flatbush, paid him because he was staying there and giving Shem there, but the yeshiva didn't pay him any money. So I remember at that time, he gave a shiur in Lampert Auditorium, then he gave a shiur in the old Beis HaMedrash, and then the next day he spoke with the Rabbein about Shailas Halacha L'Maisa, then the next day again, and Dr. Lam's office, Shailas Halacha L'Maisa, very pleasant Talma Chacham, very easygoing, very pleasant. Sometimes his style of psak wasn't exactly the way we would approach the Shailas, but he was a very, always b'seba panim yofas, always very cheerful, always with marmakaimus, always, he didn't make up things on top of his head, always with marmakaimus. Some of the people used to make fun of him, hey, he just has bikiyas. It's not true. If you have enough bikiyas, you don't have to say original chidushim. He tells you, you want to say, he tells you where it's printed. Rav Soloveitchik told us that when he was in university in Berlin, his father was not there. So his father was in America already. So he used to travel every so often by train to Vilna to talk and learning with Rav Chaim Oizer. All Yeshiva Bachim, they all went to talk and learning with Rav Chaim Oizer. So Rav Soloveitchik told us, he would tell Rav Chaim Oizer a big shtickle Torah, a big chiddush that he worked on for a long time. Rav Chaim Oizer said, yeah, it says it in this sefer. He would climb up on a ladder, pull the sefer down. Everything he said, it's all printed here. He said it was the most exasperating experience. He worked the whole week on the shtickle Torah. And Rav Chaim Oizer said, yeah, it's printed 200 years ago already in the Sefer. So that's Chacham Avadya. He didn't have to say original. He'll tell you where your shtickle Torah is printed, like Rav Chaim Oizer did. It's really, he deserves much more kavod than we're giving him. He was an Adam Mechubad Meyoid, very big Talmud Chacham, very big tzaddik. The story that you told, I think he left out one line when he needed the operation. He was afraid he may die. And nobody will be mad to the Aguna. He was afraid the surgery won't be successful. So he said he has to write that to the Aguna, and then I'll have the operation, just in case he dies. So who's going to be mad to the Aguna? He's Zichra Baruch.